Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a very exciting show for you today. My guest today will be Leslie Carrier, the Organic Gourmet. She's a chef and author and nutrition coacher, counselor up in the Berkshire area. And she'll be coming on talking to us about her latest books, etc. But before I get started, of course, I want to talk to you about what's been going on in and around the city and this past weekend where I marched in the March Against Monsanto, which was a great, great event. You know, Saturday was so cold outside. It was in the 50s. I actually had to pull out my winter coat. It was raining. It was miserable, and nobody wanted to go with me to this march. And so I went on my own, driving in from Long Island in bumper-to-bumper traffic, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing? I can't believe I'm going to this. No one else is going with me. And I was thinking about turning around, but, of course, the traffic leaving the city was even worse, bumper-to-bumper. And I kept going, and I am so glad I did. I thought to myself, you know, if I don't go, if people who are committed like myself don't show up, who will show up? Well, I'm happy to say, thousands of people did. When I first got there, there were only a few hundred, but within the hour, there were literally thousands of people there. And we were chanting, we don't want your GMOs, and say no to Monsanto. It was just great. The energy was great. There were great speakers. It would have been lovely if they had had a stage with real mics and all that. It would have added to the power of the event, but nevertheless, it was just wonderful, and the energy was really great. And so we need to get everybody on board, all of you listeners, everyone, to fight Monsanto. And there are bills being proposed in legislation all across the country in many, many different states. New York is one of them. So we need everybody on board to write to your assemblymen and senators to get the bill in New York passed. And if you go to my website, I have sample letters that you can download and send off. There's also sample letters on the Food and Water Watch website and also on GMOfreeNY.net. Again, that's GMOfreeNY.net. That is New York's grassroots organization lobbying to get these bills passed through our New York State Assembly. So please, we need everybody on board to help do that. Monsanto is a terrible, terrible company. And, you know, when you are an environmentalist, you can be an environmentalist and not care so much about food. But if you are a foodie, you are automatically an environmentalist. You cannot care about your food and not care about the environment. You know, as a matter of fact, I was just thinking, you know, in New York Times Sunday Review, there is a great article on the breeding the nutrition out of food. And that's just talking about, you know, how for not just 10, 20, 50 years, but even hundreds of years, you know, people have been liking milder flavored food and have been crossbreeding and raising food that is less nutritious. And how many people don't go so much for the bitter greens. Well, the bitter greens have more phytonutrients in it than the ones that are not bitter. So, you know, eat that broccoli rabe, eat the arugula, eat the dandelion greens. You know, spinach is okay, collard greens are okay, kale's okay, but they don't have the same quantity of the phytonutrients that the more bitter herbs have. So go for those, you know. And then today in the business section, they're talking about huge company in China buying out our pork, one of our largest pork distributors. And, you know, China is not just importing a lot of our food, but we are exporting. We are getting so much of our food from China, and we have to care about the regulations over there as well, and there's no way to really oversee that and to make sure that it's good. And then in yesterday's dining section, Mark Bittman had a great article on making peace with meat. And, you know, that's just about supporting our local farmers who are trying to do it in the right way. again, not that I eat meat and, you know, encourage people to eat meat, not at all. But if you are going to eat meat, if you buy meat that is raised in a humane way, that is raised by a small local farmer that is not being subsidized by the farm bill, they are going to need to charge more money in order to make a decent living. And we want to support those kind of farmers. And at the same time, the end result is you'll buy less, and so you'll eat less. And so it's good all the way around. Eating less meat is healthier for you, and it's better for the planet. So we need to really spread that wisdom around. So a few other things going on in around the city. June 4th, the Riverfront New York is having their annual fundraiser at the Dream Downtown at the Rooftop Lounge, and that is June 4th from 7 to 10. You can find out about buying tickets for that at theriverfundny.org. And the Riverfund is a wonderful, wonderful food pantry that I partner with very often when I feed the homeless for Thanksgiving, for Christmas, for Easter. I am partnering with the Riverfund. They do amazing work. They get so much food to so many people. Not only their food pantry, but they actually have mobile food pantries that go into different areas down in Coney Island and at Rufus King Park where I feed the homeless. So if you can support the riverfundny.org, we would really appreciate it. This weekend out on Long Island in Southold, Slow Food East End is sponsoring a spring workshop at KK's The Farm in Southold. That's at 3 o'clock. And KK is a wonderful biodynamic farmer, and she will be sharing some of the principles of biodynamic and some of the amazing work that she's doing out there at her farm. So if you can make it, that would be great. The North Shore Land Alliance is sponsoring two walks. One is a walk on the beach on June 6th. That's at 8 o'clock in the morning. And the other one is Saturday, June 8th, and that's a walk in the woods. So if you're interested in taking these walks with some naturalists and learning about the natural world, one on the shoreline and one in the woods, and bird watching, I really recommend these walks with the North Shore Land Alliance. And you can find out more information by going to the NorthShoreLandAlliance.org's website or calling them at 516-626-0908. This time of year, yoga in the garden starts, and so every Thursday and Saturday morning, there's yoga outdoors at Old Westbury Gardens. Excellent teacher, excellent class, so lovely to be doing yoga outside. So if anyone lives near Old Westbury Gardens and wants to join in on these classes, otherwise there's also outdoor yoga classes going on in and around the city. So this is the time of year. It's also the time of year for farmers markets to start up. Of course, if you live in Manhattan, you have the green markets going year-round, but in many places, this is the time, starting this weekend or next weekend, farmers markets are opening all over. Port Washington has farmers market every Saturday morning that is all organic. It's the only one on Long Island that is all organic, so I really support them. They will be opening starting next weekend through October. So you can go to the localharvest.org website, and find out where your local farmers market is, where you can buy organic meat, where you can buy get involved in CSAs. For those of you that don't know, that's community supported agriculture, where you buy a share into a farm and you get a weekly supply of whatever is being harvested at that time. And that's a great way also of not only getting good local organic vegetables at a reasonable price, but it's also a way of being part of a community. And that's one thing that the food movement is for me, is it's community, and it's about building community and bringing people together of like mind. And the more people on this path and in this movement, the more we can fight against the evils of companies like Monsanto. So please find a way to buy some local vegetables and eat lots of them. That is being proven over and over again. The more fruits and vegetables you eat, the less of everything else, the better health you will have. June 12th, Slow Food Huntington is continuing with their Food on Film series at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. And next Thursday, June 12th, actually a week from Thursday, we will be showing How to Cook Your Life, which is a wonderful story of a Buddhist chef, Edward Brown, and his spiritual path and bringing his spiritual practice into the kitchen. So when he is kneading bread, he is kneading bread. When he is stirring the soup, he is stirring the soup. And it's really a wonderful, wonderful movie. We'll be joined by a Buddhist from the Meditation Center in Huntington who will be talking about bringing your practice into everything that you do. Also, mark your calendars for the largest anti-fracking rally in New York history. Food and Water Watch is sponsoring this anti-fracking rally on the lawn in Albany. They have buses arranged leaving from Long Island, from New York City, from Buffalo, from Rochester, and from many other places. So go to Food and Water Watch's website and sign up for a bus or drive yourself there. But we need everybody to show up and protest the fracking movement. Fracking, as many of you know, is the process of drilling a mile or more down into the rock and then going horizontal and putting thousands and thousands of gallons of water and toxic chemicals underground and then creating an explosion to release gas that is locked up down there. But the problem with that is the gas is not all being able to be captured. It is being released into the atmosphere. It is getting into our water supply. It is making people sick and it is ruining towns. You might think that, you know, some of these small little upstate, well, actually, it's not upstate New York yet, but they've bought the rights in these little towns upstate New York, and they want to get started. And Governor Cuomo has the power to decide on whether we're going to go forward or not. And right now, there's a moratorium on fracking, and New York State has not started yet. But Pennsylvania has, Ohio has, Colorado has, and California has, and people are getting sick. And fracking is really bad news, and so we also need to jump on board with that and protest that. Also, Friday, June 21st, is the summer solstice, and Slow Food Huntington will be celebrating with a potluck and drum circle music celebration at Restoration Farm. That's in Old Bethpage Village. But if you don't live near us, find a summer solstice celebration near you. The summer solstice is being celebrated by many, many groups around the country, I'm sure around the world, but around the country you certainly can find other celebrations. The Slow Food Movement, many of them are having celebrations, but there's lots of other organizations that also will celebrate the solstice. So find a celebration near you. I'm also starting up with my cooking classes again. My first one will be Wednesday, June 26th. These will be seasonal cooking classes focusing on seasonal local vegetables, but it's also going to be celebrating entertaining and things that we can make when we're having these barbecues and we don't want to be doing meat. So if you are interested in cooking classes, my first two are June 26th and July 3rd. You can sign up on my website at iegreen.com. And the last thing I want to share with you is Slow Food Huntington is also sponsoring a Small World Dinner. And that is going to be an event where everyone is going to have the opportunity to celebrate a dish from their culture or their heritage. And so we're really encouraging people to go into their roots and find a dish that they can make that will share a part of themselves with the larger group. So that will be really great. So now I would like to share with you my weekly recipe. Before I invite my guest on. This week, my recipe is vegetable paella. And this can be either a main course or a side dish. And it is a wonderful recipe, and I encourage you all to give it a try. This is what you need. 4 cups of water with 1 gluten-free vegetable bouillon cube and 1 teaspoon saffron threads. 1 cup flowerettes, broccoli flowerettes. 1 cup cauliflower flowerettes. 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 1 medium onion, 2 tablespoons garlic, 2 cups assorted bell peppers, diced large, 3 cups medium grain white basmati rice, 2 tablespoons tomato paste, 1 teaspoon sweet paprika, 1/2 teaspoon smoked paprika, 1 14-ounce can diced fire roasted tomatoes with the juice, 1/4 pound green beans trimmed and cut into 1-inch length, 8 ounces of button mushrooms, halved, 1 bunch of asparagus, Remove the bottoms and cut it into 1-inch pieces. 1 can artichokes halved. 1 can organic chickpeas. Whenever I recommend you using canned beans, I recommend Eden brand because it is the only one that is cooked with kombu, which helps in the digestive process. So look for Eden brand chickpeas. 1 cup of shelled fresh or frozen peas or edamame, whichever you like. The edamame is kind of nice because they're a little larger and they're bright green in the dish and they look nice. 1/2 cup of Kalamata olive, which is optional if you'd like, and then salt and pepper to taste. You're going to start by dissolving the bouillon cube and the teaspoon of saffron threads in 5 cups of boiling water, and then set that aside. Meanwhile, you want to roast the cauliflower and broccoli, so toss that with the olive oil, some salt, and 1 tablespoon of chopped garlic, and then you're going to roast that in the oven at a 400-degree oven. The cauliflower takes about a little longer than the broccoli, so you can either, you know, put it on 2 halves of a cookie sheet or in two separate cookie sheets or roasting pans that you can remove one before the other. But the broccoli takes about 10 minutes and the cauliflower maybe 15. Heat the oil over a medium heat in a large, heavy, either cast iron pan or paella pan. Start by adding the onions, and you're going to cook those till they're translucent, about 5 minutes. Then you add the garlic, the peppers, and a little bit of salt, and cook a little more until they start to soften. Then add the mushrooms, the green beans, and continue cooking for about 5 more minutes. Then add the tomato paste, the sweet and smoked paprika, and the rice. And let that saute for a few minutes until you start hearing the rice crackling. Then add the fire-roasted tomatoes and asparagus. Cook that for a few minutes until the tomatoes cook down a little bit. Then add the saffron water and the vegetable sauce. Dip your finger into that broth, taste it, see if it needs a little more salt, add some salt and pepper. And then add the artichokes and the chickpeas. You bring that to a boil, and once it starts boiling, reduce the temperature to a medium-low. Cover it. If you don't have a cover that's large enough, which I didn't, I just used some tin foil and crimped the edges so that it sealed it tight. And let that cook for about 15 minutes until most of the water has evaporated. Then remove the tin foil, add the peas and the or edamame, the roasted vegetables, the cauliflower and broccoli, and olives if you're using it. And then recover it, let it simmer for another 5 or 10 minutes until it's all absorbed. And the thing with paella is people really like the crispy rice that sticks to the bottom of the pan. So don't be afraid if it's sticking a little bit. That's good. But when you're ready to serve it, take a flat spatula and really scrape the bottom of the pan so you get that crispy rice. That's, you know, part that some people really, really love. And then you remove it from the heat and you serve it. And it's delicious. It's beautiful. And, of course, the recipe will be posted on the PRN website or on my website at ieatgreen.com. Okay. So now I can invite on my guest. My pleasure to introduce to you Leslie Carrier. She is the Organic Gourmet. She's a chef, educator, and author, and she's been doing this for 25 years. She's teaching culinary nutrition and hands-on vegetarian cooking classes for health and vitality. She's also a cookbook author. She's written 6 cookbooks. Her latest one is an e-book called Visionary Cooking, Food for the Eyes, and we'll be talking about that more in a little while. Leslie's also been called upon to develop many recipes for natural foods companies, and her recipes have also been featured on dozens of websites, blogs, and food packages. Leslie has been interviewed by the Television Food Network and by some other radio stations and TV stations as well, as Fox News, JazzyVegetarian.com, and numerous national radio programs. She's been quoted in the New York Times and Vegetarian Times and is recognized as, you know, as one of the lead gluten-free chefs in the country. Leslie teaches many cooking classes at some of the most prestigious centers in our country, Rancho La Puerta, which is actually in Mexico, Escalon, Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health, and Omega, and also Canyon Ranch. And Leslie is also a gourmet personal chef and caterer, and her practice is up in New England. Leslie, are you with me?
I am. Thank you.
Sure. Welcome. So glad you could join us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sure. So first, I always love to get people's stories. Can you first tell me what and when and how and why you started cooking? What was your inspiration and why natural foods?
Okay, that's a great question. I always love sharing that in all my workshops because I have a very unusual journey. I always loved to cook, but wasn't thinking of it professionally. In fact, I'm actually self-trained.
Me too.
When you want to explore and be adventurous with food, then, you know, you can learn so much by engaging your own senses, which is pretty much the way I teach as well. But my journey came from an unfortunate circumstance with my dad having a brain tumor and then going, oh, no. I had a promising career as a photographer, and I said, you know, these chemicals are really toxic. I'm getting out of the dark room. And I turned my creative attention to cooking. And as when you're in your passion, the doors open. And so all of a sudden I had a week apprenticeship at a macrobiotic summer camp cooking for people who had cancer. And I just found that I really loved to cook. And I started catering, and I had like one macrobiotic cooking class, and the teacher left town and said, Leslie, take over. And I was like, what do you mean, take over?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a master's degree from Teachers College, Columbia University, in movement sciences and education. So I definitely was thinking about teaching, and all of a sudden applied my my degree as an educator to teaching cooking. And from that, people said to me, you know, you ought to write a cookbook. And I'm like, a cookbook? And sure enough, all those cooking classes created a cookbook. So my way of learning how to cook was back when I was a professor at Eastern Kentucky University teaching sports and the philosophy of movement and going to a health food store and saying, what's this, and how do you cook it? Because I grew up in New York City, and my mom, who I love dearly, hardly cooked grains. You know, I grew up as a child of the 50s, and TV dinners and white bread that you can scrunch into your hands and throw as a ball. And, you know, she gave us plenty of fruits and vegetables, and I learned how to shop really well from her because that's always a great skill of getting the most and spending the least, which, you know, in this day and age, to get organic is a true art and is definitely something I love teaching as well. So I'm self-taught. I just had an excited curiosity about all these beans and grains I never saw. Each time I went to that health food store, I brought home something new.
Mm-hmm.
And kept kind of a journal, wasn't thinking about writing cookbooks back in those days, and just wrote lists of ingredients and eventually, you know, rewrote those recipes with proper amounts and became a cookbook author and a cooking teacher and a caterer, and I love what I do, and the rest is history.
Right. Well, your latest book, not the e-book, but the one before that, the one that I had, was Gluten-Free Cooking for Everyone. And,
it's actually called Gluten-Free Recipes for the Conscious Cook. I teach a workshop called Gluten-Free Cooking for Everyone.
Oh, okay. You just taught that up at Kripalu, right? Gluten-Free Cooking for Everyone.
Well, Gluten-Free Cooking for Everyone, I'm going to be teaching July 26th to the 28th of 2013. So that's coming up in a couple of months, and I think it's filling up fast. So if you want to register for that one, I would say do it soon.
And so that's coming up. You were just at Omega, right?
Right. I just taught at Omega, and that was another gluten-free workshop that was called I'm Going Gluten-Free, Everything You Need to Know. And I co-taught that with dietitian Melinda Dennis, who is an expert in celiac and also celiac. So it was a great combination of, you know, nutrition with slides and then me offering the hands-on cooking. And the folks that came just loved it and learned so much, and they were a pleasure to work with.
Well, I don't know if you heard, my talk at the beginning, but, you know, this morning on NPR, there was a great show about GMO wheat. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Because wheat is something that I always said, well, wheat's not GMO'd. I mean, it's been hybrid all these years to be, you know, to have a lot more gluten in it than it used to. But to my knowledge, it wasn't a GMO grain. And, you know, this report was pretty amazing. You know, it was, you know, a shock to the farmer, and it was a shock to everybody listening. To find out that the wheat, and who we don't know how extensive it is, how much of the wheat is actually genetically modified now. But we certainly know some of it is.
Yeah, I suspect that some of the gluten intolerance is really due to all the chemical applications of wheat and other foods, because celiac is an autoimmune system problem. And, you know, when you're eating food that's tainted with chemicals and pesticides, insecticides and genetically modified, our bellies are not geared to digesting all these weird strands of, I'm not even going to call them food, whatever
right,
they
right.
are.
But also the DNA, the pesticide that is in these genetically modified foods lodges itself into our digestive tract, into the lining of our digestive system, and affects our ability to digest. And so
exactly.
many of the foods are connected to, or so many of our health issues are food-related. You know, it's just amazing that they don't connect this. You know, I mean, even in this report, they're saying, well, it's nothing to get alarmed about because, you know, there's no hazard to your health. You know, they just don't want to get it, you know. Yet, you know, 2 million people around the world marched this weekend against Monsanto. So it's pretty interesting.
I know. It's very easy, actually, to avoid genetically modified food if you stay out of the big box stores. I'm always a big advocate of growing as much as you can yourself, joining a CSA, an organic community-supported farm, going to your farmers markets, where you're face-to-face with the farmers. You can ask them, how'd you grow this? You know, and then you can make an educated choice. When you're in a store, right now, not everything's labeled appropriately if it has genetically modified ingredients. So you have to gamble. Or you could say, you know, if it's got canola, if it's got soy, if it's got corn, if it's got potentially wheat, if it's got sugar, 80-90% is going to be genetically modified. So
right.
you can...
that's why
that eliminates
so
a lot of food.
Right. And that's why organics, you know, still is people's greatest safeguard to being non-GMO.
That's right.
You know, it's not 100% guaranteed, like nothing is, but it's, you know, your best bet is going as organic as possible to avoid those things.
And that's one of the reasons that I like a lot of the gluten-free grains, because they are mostly grown organically. Even though corn is gluten-free, you've got to look for a non-GMO corn. And also, these gluten-free grains taste fantastic. I mean, I'm not gluten-free, and I choose to eat them over wheat very often because of the superior nutrition, the yummy flavors, and also, you know, even their, you know, solution to perhaps some of our global warming problems. Mm-hmm. For instance, some of the gluten-free grains are drought-resistant. They require less land and less water to produce high yields. Others can grow in harsh conditions, you know, arid uplands to moist tropical settings. So, you know, they could be the answer to feeding the world for sure, in my
mm-hmm.
mind.
Right. Although I know you've probably heard some of the reports. I was reading something about quinoa, for instance, with the demand of quinoa now growing, the people in... I think it was Ecuador who grow it, you know, now can't afford it. That, you know, that the demand is so great and the price has gone up so much that the locals are having a hard time eating the quinoa, you know, getting the quinoa themselves. Have you heard anything about that?
I have. I think that might be Bolivia, but
Bolivia,
it really doesn't matter. I mean, all
right.
over the world, the farmers that grow their food should be, you know, they eat first, and then if there's extra, those can go. I do believe that some quinoa is also grown out in Colorado, so certainly find out where your food is coming from And there are at least 10 other gluten-free grains that I think are great. I mean, quinoa, I think, is delicious. But, you know, what about amaranth, buckwheat,
right.
teff,
right.
wild well, rice, you know, millet?
Teff I am totally not familiar with at all. And so I knew I was interviewing you this week, so I thought I'd make one of your recipes. So I picked the red lentil and teff loaf that is in your cookbook. And I went to Whole Foods, and sure enough, they have teff flour, but they did not have the grain teff. So I bought amaranth, and I had millet, and so I combined amaranth and millet to substitute for the teff. And it worked great, and it came out great.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about the gluten-free grains. They're really versatile. They're adaptable. Millet and corn grits and teff, when you cook them, they're cuttable. So you can interchange them for polenta, or you can interchange them and even use the whole grain to make a pie crust. You could use flour, or you can use grains because it'll be cuttable. I mean, that's one of the things I love. It's like, you know, you can be the artist in the kitchen, and you've got all these ingredients to play with. Teff and millet, I think, are grown similarly in terms of the way they're like both grasses. Many of the gluten-free grains are technically grasses as opposed to like grains. So there's a lot to learn, and there's so much fun to play with. I mean, I often will use the teff flour to make pancakes and waffles and cookies and pie crusts. And again, I can eat wheat, but I'd rather have the teff because it has a slightly chocolate, you know, I'm talking subtle like molasses hazelnut. It's got a sweet, earthy flavor, which I think is just marvelous and goes great in a savory loaf with African spices or, you know, with chocolate.
The Ethiopian bread is made with teff, right?
What's that?
The Ethiopian bread that you get in a restaurant is made with teff flour, isn't it?
That's right. Well, actually, that's becoming like everything else. Ask. Injera, the Ethiopian bread, sometimes, because teff flour might be more expensive than wheat flour, there are certain restaurants that really will give you the authentic injera made with teff flour. Some will cut it with some wheat, and some will use all wheat and call it injera. So always ask, you know, is this going to be 100% teff? Because if you are celiac and you go into an Ethiopian restaurant and you order the injera and it has some wheat in it, that's going to make you sick.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
But traditionally, that's it. And I've kind of Americanized it by using the teff flour to make chocolate chip cookies and cinnamon banana pancakes and so forth, and lots of yummy, nutritious food.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about being the artist in the kitchen, having just a much wider palate, you know, so often when people say, you know, you don't cook with meat, like, what do you cook, you know? What, you know, and, you know, I start throwing out different ingredients to them and different, you know, spices or tamari or tahini or even tempeh, tofu, you know, they're foods that so many people are unfamiliar with, and so their palate is so much more limited, or their palate is so much more limited. And when you start exploring cooking with other ingredients, you have a whole other world that opens up.
And absolutely.
Like you, I just found it so fascinating. I mean, I only learned to cook when I became a vegetarian. You know, before that, you know, I ate what my mother made. I had no problem with it. But it wasn't until I stopped wanting to eat that, you know, my mom said to me, okay, you're on your own. And off I went, you know. I mean, your mother taught you how to buy fresh vegetables. My mother never bought fresh vegetables. I mean, she would buy fruit. You know, she'd make a phone call and have it delivered to the house, fruit. But the vegetables we had were iceberg lettuce, carrots, cucumbers, things just for a mixed green salad, but never romaine lettuce. It was iceberg. But I never had a fresh broccoli or cauliflower or Brussels sprout in the house. And as a matter of fact, when I first bought my first wok and I said, all right, I'm going to make a stir fry, I put some oil in the wok and I opened a can of veg oil. And I put the can of veg oil in the wok because that's what I knew for mixed vegetables. And,
well, in fact, when I started cooking, I also grew up on a lot of processed foods, and you know, I think I had Mazola oil or some Wesson oil, which probably would have been better in my car or something like that. And I went to that health food store and I bought my first bottle. I believe it was like an organic safflower oil. And I put it in the cabinet and it got rancid because all the processed oils, you know, have all kinds of petroleum derivatives in it and they don't go bad. And here was something all natural and organic, and, you know, it went bad. It needed refrigeration, and I never bothered to read the label. I just did what we did at home. And mm-hmm. so I learned really quick to read the label and all the wonderful flavors that you can get from all these vegetables. In fact, I think grains provide, like, the neutral backdrop, so you can be the artist in the kitchen. You know, you could get teff, which is brown, or you could get a red variety or an ivory variety. You know, that's kind of like apples. It's like you can get a Granny Smith or a Red Delicious. And then you can play with the colors, so you can eat the rainbow.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. We all talk about eating the rainbow. Did you also see the article this week in the New York Times about the quality, the nutrition in our foods and the quality of the foods we're eating today versus what they were 50 years ago, 100 years ago, and they even go back thousands of years.
Right. I did see that article. And the other thing I think about is a lot of these gluten-free grains, again, are ancient grains. They go back thousands of years, and these are what cultures built their society around and their rituals around, and they got their power and their fitness from these grains.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're kind of getting a renaissance, but they're still, you know, not like, you know, front and center in your natural food store, but more and more as people are asking, they're getting in there. And it's true. I mean, you know, all the genetically modified food, you know, it's just not as nutritious for you at all. And in fact, it's kind of a step backwards for your health.
Mm-hmm.
And so all this food that is centuries old, blue corn, teff, amaranth, quinoa, I mean, this is food for beyond survival. This is food for ecstatic living, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I want to go more into the specific cooking that you're doing, and I really want to talk about the ebook. But first, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, we'll talk about your cooking, visionary cooking, food for the eyes. Everyone, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I'm talking with Leslie Carrier, the Organic Gourmet. Be right back. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest is Leslie Carrier, and we're talking about her new cookbook that she co-wrote with Dr. Mark Grossman called Visionary Cooking, Food for the Eyes. Leslie, are you with us?
I am.
So can you tell us a little bit about that new cookbook and what kind of cooking one can do to help their eyesight or maintain their good eye health?
Absolutely, absolutely. And first I want to just let your listeners know that if you want to see a 9-page sample of the book, you can go to my website, which is www.lesliecarrier.com, and then click on cookbooks, and that's LESLIEC as in chef, ERIER. com. And visionary cooking is actually cooking with real whole foods or whole real foods. It's a book that gives you lots of great nutrition information. It will help you eat for optimal eye health. It will also give you a lot of information about, you know, cataracts and glaucoma and macular degeneration and how to avoid and prevent those eye diseases. And then there's great information as well as all the foods and their vitamins and minerals, as well as wonderful recipes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Mm-hmm. Are there any tips that you can, you know, share with anyone for preventative tips that one might not know for glaucoma or macular degeneration?
Sure. Well, as we were talking about, what we all need is to eat organically and sustainably grown foods. So the pesticides, the insecticides, all those horrible chemicals, those are also going to deplete your vision. So that's a simple, easy tip, I'm sure, for many of your listeners. And exercise also is really good to increase the circulation, as well as eating certain foods, for sure. So, for instance, like some people might have problems, say, with dry eyes. So eating healthy fats high in omega-6s, like borage oil is a great source of that.
What oil?
Borage.
I don't know
borage
that.
Borage oil.
How do you spell that?
B-O-R-A-G-E.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, some of the other sources of omega-6s include hemp seeds and hemp oil and flax oil. For those of you eating fish, fish oil is good. Organic grass-raised butter. You know, you're looking at healthy fats, which kind of is like if you've got dryness, you need to have more fat in your diet, and the healthy fats are what we're looking for sure.
Mm-hmm. Would avocados be in that too?
Avocados are definitely part of this book for sure. In fact, I've got a yummy avocado dressing in this book that goes on some refried beans. You want healthy fats. I mean, olive oil also is a great healthy fat. Extra virgin coconut oil, also super. So those are all great choices.
And that would that be the same? Well, that's for dry eyes. And that's probably good for glaucoma and macular degeneration as well, just in general. Healthy
oh,
oil.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to prevent and alleviate glaucoma, you know, you're looking at, you know, foods that are rich in vitamin C as well. You know, your citrus, your red peppers, tomatoes. Magnesium, also a great thing for people to eat through food because that relaxes the smooth muscles and helps the inner eye. So natural sources of that are like nuts and seeds and vegetables and sea vegetables, cacao, one of my favorite foods, green leafy vegetables, asparagus, broccoli, carrots, corn, kale, mushrooms, peas, potatoes, spinach, I mean, on and on, greens, and again, the pasture-raised organic eggs, garlic, you know, most fruits and vegetables. And again, one of my contributions to the book was as a vegetarian saying, okay, instead of fish, how about hemp seeds and amaranth and quinoa and buckwheat and non-GMO soy products? So I was always kind of saying, okay, wait a minute, if we're not eating fish, because there is some certainly good gain from eating fish for your eyes, but if you're vegan and vegetarian, what else can you do? And so
right.
Hemp is just phenomenal. Hemp seeds, hemp oil, really wonderful flavors. I'm never eating for like, this is good for me, hold my nose. I'm into like, oh my gosh, this is super luscious, let's eat it.
Right, right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Someone gave me some squash oil, butternut squash oil. That is just
wow.
So delicious. So delicious. Yeah.
I'll be right over.
It's just, I mean, you just smell it, and it's just delicious. And so that drizzled right on, you know, some greens by itself is just wonderful. And,
wow.
That was just, you know, from the seeds, you know, the part that they were taking out from all the, cleaning all the acorn, butternut squashes, you know, and, you know, pressed them and got this delicious oil.
Yum.
Yeah, so it's interesting. There's lots of newer oils out there as well that, you know, are pricey, but they're certainly fun to experiment with and play with as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, for me, I personally don't take supplements. And my immune system is very, very strong. And, you know, I'm spending my money that I might have spent on vitamins and supplements on all these, you know, whole real foods. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you that extra virgin coconut oil is as cheap as canola oil, but maybe it is. I'm not really sure.
No, it's not.
You can get, You can get great deals. Say if you went to nativa.com and joined their email list, you can get things half price mm-hmm. sometimes on Tuesdays. So again, my mom taught me to shop the sale and get the highest quality. And, you know, but if you're not buying vitamins and minerals, then, you know, spend a little bit extra money on food. You'll get it back in health 12 times.
Right. And also, you know, the supplements, you just don't know where it's coming from either. I mean, you know, you get a supplement at CVS, it's not going to be the same. It might be the same as one you get at Whole Foods, but it might not be the same as one you get somewhere else. So you really do need to look around and know where the supplements are coming from, because, you know, the standards
Absolutely.
Are different everywhere.
Absolutely, and sometimes, for instance, again, if you are gluten-free, some of the fillers in some of the vitamins might contain wheat. And then, you know, you
or
don't
animal.
Know. Or animal. And,
right.
you know, I mean, some ingredients might have sugar in it, and that's not, in my mind, going to strengthen your immune system. So I think the food is definitely your best bet, and, mm-hmm. again, as fresh to harvest to your table as possible.
Right. Yeah, I think I mentioned a few weeks ago I have a client who, you know, has been dealing with some cancer, and her doctor said, don't eat soy. And, you know, so, she was undergoing some radiation, so my natural instinct was I made her some miso soup, you know, to counteract the radiation. And she said, oh, no, I can't have soy. But she had just had, like, all this sugar, you know, and they don't tell mm-hmm. you to stay away from sugar, which feeds cancer. So I'm telling everyone listening out there right now, you know, sugar is definitely not good to have when you're dealing with cancer. But
and also,
it's just so selective what doctors choose to focus on.
Well, also, there are many different kinds of miso out there that don't even contain soy. You can get an adoogie bean miso, a chickpea miso. You can get a rice miso, a barley miso. There are many, many different kinds that have no soy. So, for instance, Miso Master or South River Miso. I mean, you can avoid soy in your food if you want to, and if you want it, great. Get a non-GMO. I mean, to blanketly say no soy is like, well, you know, you
I
might
know.
Be avoiding some of the healthier soys like an organic non-GMO tempeh would certainly have more health benefits than, say, soy milk with sugar in it that might be from a genetically modified soybean.
And carrageenan in it, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You definitely got to read your label and know, you know, if you don't understand what the word is, you might say, you know what, I don't want that.
Right.
Or
right.
you ask.
If I was making soy milk, it wouldn't have that in it, so it doesn't need it.
That's right. That's right. And in fact, when I make my pancakes and waffles, I just use an organic fruit juice and avoid using milk in general.
Uh-huh.
You know, then I've got a little bit of sweetness in the pancake already, so I don't need to slather it with maple syrup. I can put a little maple syrup in there and then eat the pancake like a muffin, pick it up with my hand, and I love doing
Not
that.
Not so sticky, right? Uh-huh.
Well, I usually fry it in extra virgin coconut oil, and I don't mind a little oil on my hands. It's good for me. In fact, it's good for your skin as well, so I don't mind eating it and putting it on my skin. But I don't wipe the pancake on me, no.
Right. No, I was just saying, if you have maple syrup on it and try to pick it up, it's all so sticky.
You're right.
To do that, so.
Right.
So going back to your website, I noticed there was something about the women's table. Can you tell us what that is? It intrigued me.
Yeah, wonderful. The women's table is an upcoming workshop I'm teaching out in the Berkshires at Kripalu, October 20th to the 25th. And that is going to be a hands-on cooking class, making all the yummy foods that are good for everybody. I mean, it's called the women's table, super luscious eating and cooking. But it's all, you know, men are invited. You can also get continuing education credits if you're a registered dietitian. And it's really about, you know, whole foods that are pleasurable, delicious, and also increasing women's health and vitality.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, if you go to my website, lesliecerier.com, click on class schedule, it'll bring you to the link and give you more information on that if you want. But it's, you know, it'll be beautiful out in the Berkshires. I'll be talking about, you know, what to stock and how to stock it, expanding your cooking repertoire to include some of those ancient grains like teff and forbidden black rice and Bhutanese red rice, and boosting your diet with omega-3 fatty acids, you know, with walnuts and flax and hemp, and, you know, just really making delicious food that's good for us.
Mm-hmm.
And working as well with some of the superfoods like goji berries and maca. And, you know, maca helps you with your libido, so that's always fun to introduce that into a class and put it in pancakes and put it in my now becoming famous cacao truffles. And, you know, really working with foods that are high in antioxidants, fiber, vitamins, minerals, but above all, super luscious.
Luscious,
so yum is what it's all about for me.
Right, right. I'm with you. So in addition to all your cooking classes, you also do private coaching, do you not?
Yes, I absolutely do coaching, and I do coaching in person. I do it on the phone. I've done it with Skype and even on FaceTime. Some of my clients live, like, on the other side of the country, or they live too far away to come over. So I can work with people who might have issues related to their libido or just overall health, or if they're an athlete and they want to switch over their diet, how can they get more energy and stamina, or how can they get just started? So there's all different kinds of programs in terms of what you're looking for. Maybe you're looking to improve your health, or maybe you're just looking to understand what to stock, how to get started, or you're looking to eat foods, you know, for maximum energy and stamina, all kinds, you know, it's very, mm-hmm. very specific. So if you're looking to strengthen your immunity or sleep better or relieve stress, aid your digestion, maybe you're looking to go gluten-free. Again, maybe you're looking for better vision. I can help you with what to eat, what to avoid, and how to make it yummy.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And all of this knowledge you got mostly just by doing it, right? Just over the years, or did you actually study nutrition as well?
You know, I got very interested in nutrition, and I thought maybe I'd go for another master's, and then I realized that was studying more chemistry. So mine is from doing a lot of research, from meeting up with doctors and learning from them, like Mark Grossman sent me all his information on food for the eyes, so I learned more about that. It's really by me being adventurous and curious and being in the right place at the right time,
mm-hmm.
and loving to cook. So, you know, I've been now teaching for over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gained
it's
a
so
lot
interesting
of...
because our path is so similar. It's really it's a pleasure to have to be speaking with you and to have you share so much of your knowledge with so many of my listeners. I'm sure everyone's gotten a lot out of this, and it's just been a pleasure. So I want to thank you, Leslie. And
well, thank you so much for having me. Thank
sure.
you. Thank
and,
you.
I hope to visit you at one of your classes or up in the Berkshires one of these times.
That would be lovely. I really enjoyed being a guest on your show. Really kindred spirits. So thank you for what you do as well.
Thank you. And everybody out there, you've been listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll see you all again next week. Have a great rest of the week. Enjoy the beautiful weather and stay cool. It's going to be hot. Have a great one.